League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Excuse me, what the hell's going on out here?
Well, Nook's scared because his eyelids are jammed and his old man's here. We need a live, was it a live rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present. Is that about right?
That's right.
We're dealing with a lot of shit.
Okay, well, candlesticks always make a nice gift, and maybe you can find out where she's registered, maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pattern. Okay, let's get to it.
Welcome back, sports fans. Today is Wednesday, October 16th, and welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens. This is episode 132. I'm Gino, joined by Kevin and Darren. You can catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to leave your questions or comments. We'll be sure to respond back to you. Thank you for tuning in. Let's get it started, guys. We've got a lot of sports to talk about. We got Jets and Giants to talk about. We got Yankees and Mets, and we're going to start with the Yankees and Mets right now. They are in the league championship series. First time in a very long time that we got Yankees and Mets in. Yankees up 2-0 currently. They beat Cleveland 5-2 in game one, 6-3 in game two. The Mets lost game one to LA 9-0. Won the second game 7-3. We're going to start it off with the Yankees. Before we get there, let's just clarify. So Cleveland wound up taking out Detroit in 5 games. Yankees took out Kansas City in 4 games. Any comments on the championship round before we get to the – I'm sorry, the division round before we get to championship? Darren?
The Yankees didn't get much hitting, but Stanton kind of carried him to get through this series. He was the best hitter on the field for that series. Judge didn't do a hell of a lot. Torres was decent as well. Volpe and Verdugo didn't embarrass themselves, but we had a lot of guys that didn't really sniff a hit like Chisholm and Wells and stuff like that. Rizzo being out definitely left a gaping hole. Cole was not good in game one, came out great in game four to kind of cement it. The Yankees, the Mets have been so exciting on the other side of the city right now. And the Yankees just kind of did what they're supposed to do. It was a business trip. We go to Kansas City. We win. We come home. Doesn't have to be that exciting. Sometimes you're just allowed to win. It's okay. And that's kind of what happened. So good news for the Yankees. I was impressed with it. On the other side, when you look at the Cleveland was down 2-1, and they were down in the seventh inning. Fry hits a big home run. They give them the lead, give them the 3-2 3-2, I'm trying to remember what the score was, give them the one-run lead anyway. They were down one, they were up one, held on in game four, and then they got the grand slam from Thomas in game five, that off Skubal, who you don't expect to give up that home run. I thought that, Detroit was kind of in good position at that point, and it just didn't work out for them. Thomas had 9 ribbies for the series, so he played pretty well. He didn't do anything during the regular season for Cleveland, but he did show up in the playoffs. That would be the way I'd describe the American League. I don't know if you guys have any other thoughts on it.
No. So here we go. So now we are in the championship round. Game one, Yankees win 5-2. Rodon is good. Goes six innings. Makes way for Clay Holmes, Hill, and Weaver. Yankees close the door. They win 5-2. Stanton had a big home run in that game. Darren, Kevin, any comments on game one?
Well, when you look at game one, Soto is definitely a presence. It's really Stanton, Soto, and Torres that kind of were involved in it early on. When you look at Cleveland's lineup, when Ramirez isn't hitting, and he hasn't hit the first 2 games, but he did it a homer late yesterday, so let's see if that spurs him on. It's a very easy lineup to pitch to, or so it seems when you're watching these games. Kevin's probably sitting there saying, how come the Mets don't get to face a lineup like this? But they don't. The Yankees do get to face this lineup, and this team won a lot of games. But the lineup, when Ramirez isn't like a major focal point and doing a lot of things, is not intimidating. Gee?
Well, listen, when we were down to eight teams in the division round, if you wanted to put the Yankees as the one seed out of the eight left, the next four were the National League teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Cleveland, Kansas City, Detroit, in some order, were the 5, 6, 7, the 6, 7, 8 of that group.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the Mets definitely have a harder road to go through as far as, you know, what's happening at the moment. Game two happens. Gerrit Cole goes 4 1/3. Holmes, Hill, Canely, back to Weaver, close the door. And Judge finally gets on the board, hits a home run in that game. Yankees are now up 2-0. Any comments on game two?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Gerrit Cole, you're making how much damn money? You know, Rodon, the game that Rodon pitched, he pitched great. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 9 Ks. That's what you expect from Cole, not being knocked out in the fifth inning. Do a better job there. Come on.
He couldn't locate. He just could not locate, and it's unacceptable in the playoffs. For what's supposed to be a big game pitcher,
two of the three starts in the postseason now, he's not been good.
No, yes. I mean, he only had the one good start in game four, and that's it. You hope that Judge's home run gets him going. The question you have to ask yourself a little bit is, do you keep Wells in the four spot? Because right now, it's like, why not Rizzo? Why not move Rizzo up to the four if you want to keep it that righty-lefty and you want to have somebody in between? I don't even play that game. I put Stanton in the four, and I don't even play with it. G?
So I know that the lineup is set up this way so that it's righty-lefty all the way down the lineup. I get it. I don't like it, but I know that's the way Boone has it set. But, you know, for me, I want Stanton 4, Chisholm 5. Drop Wells to at least 6. You don't have to drop him down to 8, but you got to drop him down a little bit because, you know, you want Soto and Judge to have somebody behind them that's hitting the ball. And right now, Stanton's freaking on fire. I mean, you know, I didn't think he was going to get this hot. I mean, he's on fire right now. So,
Giancarlo Stanton is pretty good. Always has been, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is what he does.
You know,
know when it's not going to happen anymore because he slowed down so much in the regular season, but he showed up here in the playoffs.
For me, I drop him down to 6 and move Stanton Chisholm up, but I know Boone is, you know, on the righty-lefty thing. If that's the case, I'd switch him and Chisholm. I'd switch him and Rizzo at this point. But Wells is just – he doesn't even look like he's seeing the ball right at the moment. So, you know, for me, I would definitely drop him. Kev?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean – My thought was you put Stanton 4. You need somebody there behind Judge. I mean, we know Judge is scuffling. Like, so maybe the home run last night gets him on track and sort of gets that monkey off his back. But right now, with Austin Wells hitting behind Judge, if you do get through Soto, do you have to – any reason at all to throw a strike to Judge?
No.
They intentionally walked Soto to pitch to Judge last night.
Yeah.
I've never seen that happen since he was a rookie, where somebody wanted to face Judge. So he's off, and there's nobody behind him. So if Judge has that, and he hit a sack fly, which for Judge was like, you're a little excited about it. He actually had a couple of good swings that he hit the homer last night. But you're right, Kev, there's nobody behind him. There's no one that's scared. Chisholm isn't hitting his weight. If you want to go with that lefty, it's got to be Rizzo, because Chisholm hasn't done anything either. He had a double last night. Maybe it means something, but that was the first hit he had in a while. And I actually go Stanton 4, and I'd probably move Rizzo up to 5. I would drop Wells to 7 or 8. I got to be honest with you. I really would. He's not hitting right now. And, you know, maybe he's putting too much pressure on himself because the top of the order is getting on. You know, when you look up at a Yankee game and you look up in that and see who's on base, it's Torres, it's Soto. These guys have been on. And, you know, Wells is coming up in big spot after big spot. He's not even making contact. He's swinging right through high fastball after high fastball. It's not even close.
I mean, I know they're up 2-0, so I don't want to start feeling like all I'm doing is complaining, but can the Yankees base running be just, I mean, semi-decent? I mean, guys getting picked off, caught stealing, there's no reason to get picked off there. You got a half a rally going. You got guys up that are going to hit the hell out of the ball. What the hell? I didn't like it. Got on my nerves. I think
Sterling referred to them as drunks last night. They're running around like drunks. Sterling on the air. I'm just saying. I mean, it's not something you normally hear. I mean, Chisholm getting picked off in a big spot yesterday was unacceptable. Unacceptable. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, there's enough things that'll drive you crazy. Tim Hill, every time he comes in the game, makes me cringe. I know he's gotten out of him. I don't expect much out of him. Holmes has been good in this role.
Holmes has been good.
I'm not going to mess with it.
But
he's out of the closer role.
He's in doing games, much better.
Yeah.
In games like yesterday, do I have to see Weaver in the ninth? I know you're going to tell me. I know you're going to tell me to
off. Day off. Day off.
I get it. I get it. But Darren, do we have to? Does he have to pitch? And does every batter have to see his delivery and his windup and his timing every game?
Who did you want to come in the ninth last night?
Darren, you're up four runs. Give me somebody. If they falter and get a guy on, okay, fine. But at least let somebody else, you know, I mean, come on.
I just don't trust anybody in the pen that we hadn't used already. Basically, I'm willing to go with Holmes to an extent, which I never thought I'd say.
Hill,
and then Weaver. I'm not even willing to go Ian Hamilton. I'm scared to go to any of these guys. Cousins, I'm not confident in any of them. I get your point though, Gino. Why waste them? But I was just, if they didn't have the day off and they did it, I would have been angry with the day off on them to do it. But you're right. And then Ramirez gets the horn off.
I get it with the day off. I get that there's time for him to rest. He's not pitching back. I get it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, Boone, you don't have to pitch. He doesn't have to get a save in every game. He doesn't have to pitch in every game. 4-1
lead is not getting the save anyway.
I know. So,
and right. To be honest with you, Boone has no creativity at all. So, he shouldn't even be there. Let's be honest. Cashman and him should be gone. And barring a World Series victory, they should both be gone anyway.
Now you talk about bullpen usage. I mean, look at Cleveland. I mean, first off, in the first round, they were very fortunate with all the days off Smith pitched all five games. I think Herron pitched all five. Gaudio and Clase pitched four of the five. And now you look at the first two games because Cobb gave you 2 2/3 and Bybee gave you an inning in the third. You know, now you've had 12 innings in 2 days from your bullpen after being used extensively in the first round. And they've got nobody to give him depth in the starting rotation. How are you going to get through anything the next 3 days?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, listen. I mean, they're pitching Boyd, who hasn't got more than three innings.
Yeah.
He hasn't got more than three, and he hasn't even been hit hard. I mean, so, you know, what are they going to stretch him to four? I mean, you know, I mean, Cleveland's, I don't know. They've managed this series horribly. Well, the playoffs horribly, but not giving their starters a chance. Just in the first round, all three starters were pitching well enough to stay in games to go at least five, and they didn't give them a chance. And it's like I don't think you can win series, long series with bullpens.
They couldn't wait to get into the bullpen.
And listen, I know they have a great pen. I'm not doubting it. They have a great pen.
But what
you can win with bullpens, provided your starters are giving you something. When your starters are giving you two, there's no way you're winning.
No, that my point was like bullpen starts over and over again, because that's almost what it's like. I mean, you know, Tampa won zero championships.
When you're asking seven different pitchers to come in and pitch well, you know, that's a lot of pitchers to ask. Yeah. And if one or two of them are off, you know, there's four runs right there.
And this ain't Detroit. The Yankees are going to take pitches and take pitches and take pitches. And you know what? You're good. They're going to get your pitch count up. And you're never going to have one inning of nine pitches. You're not going to get that much with the Yankees. So if you pitch the next day, you're pitching off 20, 25 pitches a lot of the time because they are so patient. Even when they're not hitting, they are patient. And that's one of the things that makes it very difficult to face them.
All right. So we shift to the National League now. Mets playing the Dodgers. Mets wound up beating Philly in four. We talked about that last week. Dodgers got past San Diego in five. Wound up pitching shutouts in the last two games to shut down San Diego. Darren, any thoughts?
Well, listen, you're not going to win if you don't score, so it doesn't really matter in a lot of the ways. And the Padres didn't score in the last 23 innings of the series, 25 innings, whatever it was of the series. But the fact of the matter was, the fact that Schilt went to Cease on short rest in game four was horrible. Cease was rocked in game one. Why in the world are you going to him in game four on short rest? He didn't even get you to the third, you know, so it was a mistake. And then all of a sudden now you're back 2-2 where you're sitting there trying to, you know, close a team out at home. You gave yourself no chance with him. And Darvish pitched a gem, but if you don't score, you don't win. So, I mean, I thought Darvish was actually great in both games he pitched against the Dodgers. You know, I mean, you know, Darvish is like Senga, only, you know, not banged up. He has variations of 30 pitches. So you don't know what he's going to throw. And if he can locate and throw strikes, he's dangerous. And when he can't, he gets rocked or he walks you around the bases. But the Dodgers didn't give up a run even in game one against the Mets. And then all of a sudden, you know, and we'll get into that. So they went on that long run of great pitching. And now the Mets are going to start smacking them around a little bit, I think.
All right. So game one against the Dodgers. Mets lose 9-0. Flaherty, seven innings, shut him down. Senga and Peterson in that game weren't good. Mets in game two get a win 7-3. Minaya goes five innings, pitches really well. Dodgers had to go with an opener. That didn't fare very well for them. Mets had a five-run second inning capped by a Vientos grand slam. They go on to win the game 7-3. They're currently in game three. Dodgers are up 2-0 in the fourth at the moment. Kev, yeah, let's talk about this series a little bit.
Yeah, game one, Senga was just non-competitive. 10 out of 30 pitches for strikes. That's unacceptable. But, you know, here's what I like Mendoza did. Peterson was ready to go because he was going to be the guy, the bulk guy after Senga. But to get out of the jam, he brings in Reed Garrett. I wish more managers, if they're planning on having this type of setup, bring in one of your relievers, maybe not your A reliever, but your B reliever, to come in early, stop the rally, and then let the guy who's been starting start the third inning. I thought good managerial decision there. Peterson didn't have it. He struggled. Three hits by the offense. Game over early. I mean, nothing you could do. You chalk that one up. Game two, the biggest at bat, Lindor leading off. Bang, there goes the shutout streak. We didn't have to hear about 36 straight innings of shutout ball. That was 33, whatever it was. It was too many to count. And then Vientos taking offense to them walking Lindor to pitch to him, which he can't blame the Dodgers for doing it. And Vientos battles, you know, nine-pitch at bat that hits a grand slam. Great piece of hitting by Vientos. Like I said, five terrific innings from Minaya, tired in the sixth. But Maton, Stanek, and Diaz came in and a few base runners here and there, but they held on and did the job. And now we're in game three. And unfortunately, the second inning, we had a leadoff walk to Muncy. And then three balls that didn't get past the pitcher's mound. And two guys are on base, one run in, only one out. And then Edmund with the sacrifice flies, 2-0. Mets losing. Darren?
A couple of quick points on it. And listen, I don't criticize Mendoza much because I like him. But, you know, first of all, what happened with Senga was what I thought was going to happen in game one against the Phillies. It just didn't.
Yep.
I just didn't know what you were going to get from him. He started the League Championship Series. He looked so good against the Phillies. You give him the shot, and he just didn't have it. I didn't like them bringing Peterson in at all. It worked out fine because they didn't need him in game two. But when you're already down like that, why bother? Well, you go with the other guy. Save Peterson for it. You're going to need him in a big spot. You don't have another lefty you really care about. You know, you're going to need him to face Ohtani. You're going to need him to face Freeman. I don't like wasting him there in that game one. I disagreed with bringing him in altogether. Didn't matter. I mean, he didn't have it, but, you know, it didn't really matter. They weren't going to win that game. You can't win if you don't score. But, you know, so I didn't like that move at all. The Senga move, obviously, you know how I feel about pitching him in the playoffs at this point in time. I just don't like it. But the one thing I'll say, if I told you, Kevin, or you, Gino, that during spring training that – the two most important players on each, two of the most important players on each team would be Minaya and Weaver. You would have both laughed your asses off at me. But right now, the Mets can do nothing without Minaya. Minaya is the guy, and the Yankees rely so heavily on Weaver, it's ridiculous.
The fact that he wasn't on the team is spring training.
This was the beauty of baseball. Weaver could like lose all his stuff next year and not be good again. Same could happen to Minaya. It's just so funny how it all kind of works out from time to time like that. But Minaya was, I thought he was great. And just watching the way he, you know, he had Ohtani off balance. He had Betts off balance. He had everybody off balance. I mean, I know he's tied a little bit in the sixth, but you know what? He was great. And, you know, and I've watched him pitch for years and never saw him this effective ever. You know, Hefner's got to get a little bit of a bump on this year. I mean, I thought he's done a good job getting him turned around, Hefner. So I thought it was, I always liked him when he pitched a little bit.
And I'll be honest, you know, there are a lot of criticisms of mine. Should have started Benatia game one on regular rest, blah, blah, blah. You know, a part of it, and I think you saw a little bit in game two towards the sixth inning, he's up near 200 innings. This guy who only one of the year has been up near 180. He's been hurt a lot. He's usually in that 150 if he pitches a full season. So he's in territory where he's not. So if you can buy him the extra day, get him into game two, where, as it turned out, it didn't matter if he pitched game one. They would have lost anyway with the fact that they only got three hits. But you get him in two, then you also get him in six. Hopefully he goes that far. And again, he's got the extra day pitching on game six. So hopefully that little thing, little subtle thing like that helps Manaea.
I you know, I had no question about it. I would have, again, I wouldn't have went with Senga. I would have probably thought of Peterson maybe just to throw them off a little bit, but that's just me. Again, you know, you're asking a lot of a guy that hasn't pitched at all this year.
Yeah.
You know, you're asking a lot. How many innings? Total? Three innings or so that he pitched this year? I mean, you know, going into that start?
Five in the third in Atlanta or against Atlanta, and what, two against Philly? That's right. So seven in the third.
Yeah. Seven and a third. I mean, he didn't do anything. And you're like, okay, you're going to start game one of the LCS. It's like crazy. So you're watching the Mets-Dodgers. If the Dodgers don't win it, is Roberts in trouble?
Considering his lack of starting pitching, you know what? Yeah, he probably is in trouble.
One World Series with all these players that they've been buying over the years. I'm just saying.
I changed that. He's in trouble. Yes.
Part of it, the pitching has been non-existent in the last four or five. I mean, Flaherty going seven innings the other day. It was the first time a starter went past, what, five since 2021?
Exactly.
When Scherzer went six. I mean, this is a team that's in deep runs most years.
Mm-hmm.
They have not had the starting pitching. For some reason, they always break down. But yeah, I mean, Dodgers are favored to win the series, and they need to go out there and win it with the stars they have.
No, I agree with you. I think that Roberts is going to have to start winning. They're going to keep buying your players. You got to win. And the Dodgers, again, don't stop spending, you know, they keep going here. And you know, Buehler's coming back from a second Tommy John. You give it at the young kids, Miller and stuff. He just didn't have a season. You know, Kershaw got hurt, and you weren't even counting on him. A lot of things happened to the rotation. Yamamoto got hurt, but he wasn't nearly what they thought, you know, that he was going to be. So a lot of questions with it. But the Roberts question is interesting to me because we don't live in L.A., so he doesn't come up a lot. I mean, we all want to fire, you know, Boone and Cashman. You know, the Mets guys are going to get plaques placed for them no matter how they do in this series. Doesn't really matter. The Yankee guys better – at least make it exciting in the World Series, or they're done, and they have to still get by Cleveland. So there's a lot of questions with that.
One little quick stat. Lane, one of our listeners, thanks for bringing this to my attention. Five previous times in Major League Baseball history, a team has been shut out by nine or more runs in game one. The team that was shut out in game five came back and won all five series.
Look at Kev trying to find a bright side from getting
shut out. Hopefully the Mets make it 6-6. But Lane, thank you for that little tidbit, Lane.
I hope so, too.
All right. We're going to move to the NFL. We're going to start with the Jets. We're going to do this in chronological order. So we talked last week about the head coach getting fired, new head coach in. By the time we went off the air and before the game started, they had turned the play calling duties over. Kev, comments?
Boy, that offense looked night and day compared to what we've seen the last few weeks. Some motion. They ran motion on like 60% of the plays instead of 40. What I liked was some of these pitch plays on the run to Breece Hall. Get him outside. Stop running between the tackles so much. Let him use his speed. Let him get outside. I thought it was a much better called offensive game. That being said, they still made some mistakes, but
we'll get to the game in a sec. Darren, are you good? You guys good with the change in the play calling? So you took the play calling away from Hackett. So
yeah, I mean that Downing's not been good anywhere he's called plays, and yet he seemed like he was 10 times better than Hackett. I'll put it that way. Hackett seems like that job is above him.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like what they said about Bieniemy all those years as the offensive coordinator in Kansas City, where he's not calling the plays, where he's the offensive coordinator but redoing everything. It's like Aaron Rodgers was kind of calling the plays in Green Bay with LaFleur, and Hackett was just there for the ride. Just a thought. I know you're about to say something. I'm sorry, G.
All right. Okay. So we get to Monday night. Buffalo beats the Jets 23-20. Buffalo goes to 4-2. Jets go to 2-4. Josh Allen had 2 touchdown passes. Bills had a crucial late game interception to help secure the win. Despite a 52-yard Hail Mary touchdown pass, his time expired at the end of the first half. Jets had some crucial issues which cost them the game, including 2 potential missed Greg Zuerlein go-ahead field goals, both hitting the upright, as well as a holding penalty that negated a touchdown, a drop pass in the end zone. Listen, the refs were horrible. There's penalties all over the place on both teams. Buffalo, 11 for 94. The Jets, 11 for 110 yards. Kev, talk about the game itself. Don't go past the game. We're going to get to that next. We'll get to the next thing in a minute. Go ahead.
First, let me just get this out. You're right, Gino. It was a horrible. Officiated game. And I'm not blaming – the referees did nothing to screw either team. The referees screwed both teams. Neither rough in the passer was rough in the passer. I'm sorry. Yeah, the early – I mean, I know everybody's complaining about the pass interference against Garrett Wilson in the fourth quarter. Well, there was one in the first quarter or second quarter against Reed where the ball was 5 yards out of bounds, and they called PI. I mean, just awful. Some of the ticky-tack holds. I didn't think Smith really held on that touchdown that was called back. But, you know, that, like I said, bad calls both ways. Horribly officiated. Affected both teams. As far as the team, embarrassing first drive. The Bills came out after the Jets went up 3-0, and they don't have Cook. James Cook is a running back. They've got Ray Davis, a rookie, that I don't know if anybody's heard of, you know, unless you're a fancy guy, you know.
Heard of him in college, but, you know, I wouldn't say that I know him.
He's not a household name. But embarrassing. 9 plays, 70 yards, and 454. 1 pass completion for 14. 8 rushes for 61 yards, where they were blowing them off the line of scrimmage. They were Davis and a little bit of Ty Johnson on that drive were – felt like 4 or 5 yards down the field before there was even contact. That defensive line was blown off the ball. Embarrassing. They did get a little bit better as the game went on, but overall, the defense did not show up for the most part. Darren, what do you think?
Well, listen, Zuerlein, this is the second time he's cost the team games because he can't kick a field goal, all right? You know, you give him a break in the bad weather in Denver, but now you miss 2 short ones. I know it's windy, but you know what? Get past it. You have one job to do. You get paid over $1 million a year to kick a ball 17 games. Freaking kick it through the uprights. Michael Clemens should be cut.
Yep.
He's horrendous. Not just because he doesn't know how to call contain on a big third down where you know Allen's keeping the damn ball, but throughout the game, he's just getting blown off the line. He gets no pressure. The loss of Jermaine Johnson is so huge to this team. I'm not talking about Reddick. Reddick's never been here, so I can't even bring him up. But the loss of Jermaine Johnson is so huge because I have to watch Clemens get blown off the ball every single play. He is awful. He should have been cut. Reed was victimized the week before. You know, Sauce had a little trouble. This week it was Reed that had a little trouble. But he got beat a couple times against a team without a number one wide receiver until after the game, as Gino will touch on later. Ashton Davis stepping in for Chuck Clark had trouble with coverage all night. He could not stick with anybody. Seemed like he was sliding all over the place. Javon Kinlaw is an embarrassment. He can't stop the run, and he doesn't get to the quarterback. It wasn't a roughing the passer on him, but it's still stupid. Stupid. Tyron Smith gives up sacks every game. Every single game. Whether you think it was a hold or not, you know, you could have called it, you could have not called it.
Yep.
Same point in time, he's still getting beat by a team that doesn't get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Epinesa was benched because he doesn't get pressure, and he beat Tyron Smith, you know?
What really stood off to me was
Clemens. Yeah.
I was going to say, especially with Smith, I mean, Rodgers not a statue back there. Rodgers does have a little maneuverability. He does feel the pressure once in a while. Smith is just getting beat. None of these are coverage sacks that Smith has given up. He's just flat out getting beat.
He's getting hit so early.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. Every offensive lineman had a penalty except for Simpson, who was actually voted the number one guard in the league this week by Pro Football Focus. He had the best numbers of anybody in the week. And Tippett was the number one center, even though he had a hold at some point in that game, which I thought was a little questionable as well. but they were calling plays all calling penalties all over the place, like you guys said. And the sad part was, this was the most exciting game of the weekend.
It was.
The weekend of football sucked. It was horrible. There was no fourth quarter dramatics. There was no good teams and playing each other where there was a chance of the comeback. Everything was a blowout. Everything was ugly as sin. There was no, what do you want to call Tennessee and Indianapolis with two bad offenses, a great game? It wasn't. You want to say Washington, Baltimore was a good game? It was entertaining, but Baltimore was never a threat to lose it. So you never felt that. This is the only game that was a chance of anything happening. And even with that, you know, even Cincinnati Giants was excited, was close, even though the Giants can't score. But the Jets, Bills game, the Jets had that game won, and they gave it away. They were the better team on paper. They should have been the better team on the field. And you know what? Because of guys, and where's Quinnen Williams? I mean, I'd like to see him show up more than one play where he made a play in the backfield or getting into a fight after a little skirmish. I'd like to see him not get blown off the ball, too. I don't care if he's getting double teamed. I see Dexter Lawrence fighting through double teams every freaking night. I don't see Quinnen Williams doing it at all. I need to see more. So a lot of things I didn't like about this game, but the play calling I loved.
Okay, so Jets are 2-4. That's Monday night. Tuesday, which has been rumored for a couple of weeks now, Davante Adams does get traded, goes to the Jets. It's conditional third-round pick. Could be a second based on performance. Jets wind up picking up most, if not all, of the salary for this year. Listen, it's a great trade by value alone, okay? By value alone, it's a great trade. Doesn't change a lot of the other issues that are going on with the Jets right now. I assume, and you guys will correct me, that the guy who probably gets a less of a role out of these wide receivers is Mike Williams. Okay,
because Roger's going to rip him into the game.
Now, how is a lot of that stuff going to work? We'll find out. But listen, it's a great trade on value alone. It doesn't change Aaron Rodgers' age, his play, doesn't change the O-line play, doesn't change the freaking penalties and the special teams that haven't been good. But listen, it's a great trade by itself. Darren.
Okay, my quarterback is 41 years old. If I'm not going to go all in this year, when am I going to do it? I have no choice. Gino, we already doubled that. We talked about this, and you said it. You're like, you guys think this team's better than it is. You've been saying it the whole time. And you know what? On paper, the team by name should be better than it's been. And at the same point in time, they haven't been. Rodgers, as mediocre as he's been, probably has thrown the ball better than any Jet quarterback I've ever seen outside of Vinny's 1 year in 1998. Being honest, I mean, the throws he can make, I haven't had a quarterback able to make those throws, except for Vinny in 1998. Sanchez couldn't do it. Geno couldn't do it. Darnold couldn't do it. You know, Chad certainly couldn't do it, as much as I love Chad Pennington. You know, we haven't had guys that can put the ball where he can put it. He just needs a little bit more time. And that O-line really has to step up for him. But what this does, again, it puts another supremely talented guy out on the offense, where now you have Garrett Wilson can't get the number one cornerback every single play because you're going to leave the number two on Davante, who they're not going to be able to cover. And what it should do is open up the running game tremendously, which will really be what helps Aaron Rodgers. Having the two wide receivers out there will make it where if the O-line can open up any kind of holes in the middle and those three guys have to do better, they should be able to get one-on-one matchups because they're running the ball better than they have been so far this year. They have the guy. You said it last week. When's Breece going to get on track? Well, they didn't give Braylon Allen the ball at all, except for the touchdown they called back and one other carry. So they were listening to the show, G, because they were like, Geno's right. We got to get Breece in the row. We got to get Breece going, and they did. But if we're banking on a 41-year-old quarterback with nothing else behind it, except for a 30-something-year-old backup that's a backup, what else are we going to do? You got to go all in. You got to say, all right, at 2-4, still in the hunt in this AFC, teams are going to beat each other up, and you still have a chance of making the playoffs, even winning this division, in my opinion. So yes, that's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what's left on their schedule. It's not the world's worst schedule here. You know, this week they've got Pittsburgh Sunday night.
House of Horrors.
Oh, terrible place for the Jets to play. Always has been.
How are they a road favorite? I have no idea.
I mean, have the Jets, what are the Jets? One win, I think, in Pittsburgh in their history?
Yep.
But then after that, you know, New England, Houston's a good game. Arizona, Indy, home for Seattle, Miami, Jacksonville, Rams, Buffalo again. I mean,
they're all teams they can beat. They can lose and beat them.
The games are there to bounce back from 2-4. As far as what they gave up a 3. I don't think Adams got play enough to be first or second team all pro, which would make it a 2. If he's on the active roster for the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl, it becomes a 2. Guess what? If they're in the AFC Championship game at least because they made the trade for Davante Adams, I'll give him a 1.
Yeah, I agree with you, by the way.
I mean, okay. So for the value for the trade,
it's going to be a 3.
1,000%. It's a 3. Great value to get Adams for a 3.
Okay. 2-4, guys. 2-4. I'm telling you, I think you need 10 to get a spot.
That's 8.
Which means you got to go 8-3.
Yeah.
So based on the schedule, it's doable.
Yes.
More realistically, probably 9-8 and hoping for a tiebreaker. But yes, 10-7 is probably what secures you.
You need to be 10-7.
10-7.
You need to be 10-7 to guarantee it. 9-8 for a tiebreaker is the only luck that you get.
Okay. Only other Jet news was they also gave permission to Riddick to see if he could find a trade partner.
Detroit seems like a good trade partner.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Right now, we'll get to that in a minute.
We'll get to the reason why in a little bit. But yeah.
Yep.
All right. We will move over to the Giants. They lose to Cincinnati 17-7. Burrow, 47-yard touchdown run. Chase Brown, game-clenching 30-yard score, helped the Bengals secure the win. Bengals defense stepped up with key plays, including an interception by Pratt. Giants missed opportunities with 2 failed field goals and turnovers on downs. Jones wasn't bad. He wasn't great. He had 56 yards on the ground. Again, though, for me, he shows no pocket presence. If the first guy is covered, he's looking to take off right away. Giants moved to 2-4. Any comments on the Giants, guys?
Yeah, well, listen. This team at home is 0-3, and they put up 0 points, basically. They have scored a grand total of 28 points in 3 home games, 6 against the Vikings, 15 against the Cowboys, 7 against the Bengals. The thing about it is none of those 3 defenses are what you would call outstanding. They just don't show up at home. It's a problem because on the road, they look at least competitive. They could be 3-0. They lost to Washington without a kicker, so you don't know how that game would have went. Both quarterbacks in this game led their teams in rushing, which tells you how good the running backs did. Because Burrow and Jones were the leading rushers. Again, you never get 2 good halves out of Daniel Jones. And I know that Dable was going crazy, going for everything he possibly could because he's trying to show that he's got guts and confidence in the team. But a couple times, it looked like they were a little bit risky moves. The Giant defense is pretty good. If they can get any kind of consistency on offense, and I know the neighbor's back to be that guy, if they can get any kind of consistency on offense, they could bother some teams. The problem is that right now they have no consistency on offense and they don't have a quarterback that could lead them. And, this is what happens. The Thomas Hendrickson matchup was great, but Hendrickson beat him twice for sacks. I think the rest of the game, Thomas owned him, but as an offensive tackle, you get beat twice, it gets noticeable. Bengals, this is their start to try to see if they can climb back into it as well. So we'll see what happens.
Kev?
Just a boring game.
Yeah.
The Giants showed nothing. I mean, I was trying to figure out which was more boring, the Giants losing to the Bengals or the Mets losing 9-0 to the Dodgers. Both games are tough to watch at that point.
I gotta be honest.
All right. Baltimore beats Washington 30-23. Washington struggled to contain Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry. They combined for 470 total yards. Jaden Daniels had 2 touchdown passes to McLaurin. Washington's ground game was ineffective with just 52 rushing yards without injured running back Brian Robinson. Washington defense couldn't stop Baltimore's balanced attack. They ended their 4-game winning streak. My Commanders are still atop the NFC East, Darren?
Yeah, the only point I'm going to make is that Washington's defense is not good enough to play from behind yet.
Agreed.
Washington's defense is there if they're playing from ahead, But when they're playing from behind and they have to play catch up, which is what they had to do the whole game, it's just you see the flaws in it. The flaws that you didn't see the last couple of weeks.
They're playing from behind, playing catch up, and then also Baltimore. I mean, you talk about Clemens with the Jets. You look at Baltimore's pass rush, where everybody's so disciplined, staying in their lanes, keeping Daniels in the pocket. Daniels only rushed 6 times for 22 yards.
Yeah.
They didn't let him get outside the pocket. They didn't let him escape. They made him a pocket passer. He still did a terrific job passing. I mean, Daniels played real well. The only thing that he didn't do was run.
I found my quarterback. I don't know what else to tell you. It looks like at this point through six, I found my quarterback. So,
All right. The one thing you say about Baltimore, though, is that they get to practice against Lamar Jackson. Not every team out there is going to be able to practice against the clone of Daniels. And that's what it is. It's almost like the clone.
No, it's a good point.
Experience, but that's the guy they get to practice against.
Yep.
All right. San Francisco beat Seattle 36-24. Both teams go to 3-3. Purdy threw for 255 and 3 in the victory. Debo, 76-yard touchdown. Kittle finally got back involved. 2 scores. Seattle struggled with 3 turnovers, a weak running game. Geno Smith, 312 yards passing. Darren?
Seattle was 3-0, not at 3-3. You know, listen, you found out who they are. Game wasn't this close, even though they only lost by 12. San Francisco was in control of this game.
Okay. Detroit beat Dallas 47-9. Detroit moves to 4-1. Goff threw for 315 and 3. Montgomery ran for 2 scores in the Detroit blowout. It's a great win, unfortunately. Detroit lost pass rusher Aiden Hutchinson in the third quarter on a sack of Prescott when his leg collided with his teammate's leg. It's a serious left tibia injury. It required surgery before he even went home. He was placed on IR. No timetable for his return. And that's where the Reddick could be, Kev.
Well, you know, yeah, they're saying 10 to 12 months preliminarily, by the way. I mean, but it's like,
it's like gruesome injury. Broken, right?
Yep. Gruesome injury. This is the worst loss, by the way, in the Jerry Jones ownership of the Dallas era at home. They got crushed. You know, they were never in it. I mean, you know, and Detroit toyed with them. Detroit was sitting there, flea flickers, and oh my God, they were like, we're going to embarrass you on your home turf. This is going to be great. They couldn't wait to do it, and they did it.
Happy birthday, Jerry. As far as replacing Hutchinson, you know, of course, you mentioned Reddick already. You got to look at, you know, maybe a Max Crosby from the Raiders, because they're having a bad record, bad season. Miles Garrett from Cleveland, they're 1-5. Do they try to unload Garrett and get at least, you know, late round draft pick? Those are a couple guys to look at for the Lions. I mean, you're not going to replace Hutchinson, but you have to at least get somebody in here who can rush the passer.
Okay. That's a huge void for a championship team.
Yep.
All right, points around the NFL. Minnesota, Kansas City are only undefeated teams. They both were on the bye. They're both 5-0. NFC North, by the way, has four win teams. There are no winless teams at this point in the season. 6 teams with only 1 win. Following the Devontae Adams trade yesterday, Amari Cooper was moved from Cleveland to Buffalo for a 3rd and a 7th. Buffalo also got back a 6th in that trade. And Minnesota made a trade also yesterday. They brought in Cam Akers from Houston for a 6th-round pick. The 2nd year in a row they have traded for Cam Akers. So just a note. Houston got the win, moved to 5-1. I'll go through these fast. You guys can touch on a couple of points. Green Bay.
I thought May was okay, by the way, in his first game back. He didn't look that bad in that game.
He did look good. Green Bay moved to 4-2 with a victory. Chicago moved to 4-2 with a victory.
Yeah, Williams looked good in that game. I know it's against Jacksonville, but 226 and 4 touchdowns. Real nice game for Williams. He's starting to find his footing there in Chicago, and they're 4-2.
Yep. Tampa Bay moves to 4-2. Love
threw for 4 touchdowns in the Green Bay game, and Marvin Harrison got hurt, which definitely hurt Arizona in that game.
Yeah. Tampa Bay moved to 4-2. They destroyed New Orleans at 51-27. That score, it was crazy. Pittsburgh beat Las Vegas, moved to 4-2. Atlanta moved to 4-2, beat Carolina. Any other points, guys?
Sadly, that was one of the more fun games of the weekend, by the way. Carolina actually hung in there. With Andy Dalton, they're actually competitive. They're not very talented, but they hung in there for a while. They were down like 22-17 in that game, and then they kind of fell off.
I thought one game you didn't mention yet, Philly and Cleveland. Philly wins 20-16, but Sirianni getting into it with his home crowd fans because Philly played like crap the whole game. Cleveland was somehow in this. I mean, Deshaun Watson looked bad again. Need to talk about him being benched for Winston, just see if they could shake that up. But why is Sirianni, after a home win, going after fans?
Because he's a moron. He's always been a moron.
Yeah.
He's really not. He's going to get fired. I mean, the thing about it is that nobody saw Washington coming right now. But you can't say you feel confident in Dallas or Philly being better than Washington at this point. You just can't say it. To be honest, you know, even the Giants will be competitive with them on the road. They just don't play well at home. Sadly.
Sadly. Okay, that concludes NFL for week number 6. Week number 7 has a couple of
points this week.
Okay, I was just going to go there, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said that concludes the NFL. My bad. Go ahead, Jay. Sorry.
It concluded week 6 as we go to week 7. Jets are at Pittsburgh. Eagles are at the Giants. A couple of good games on the docket. Vikings home for the Lions. Packers home for the Texans. 49ers home for the Chiefs. Monday night game, we got the Bucks at home against the Ravens. Darren?
Well, start Kevin. Kevin has his hand up.
Pittsburgh, they're 4-2, I believe.
Yes.
Justin Fields has been playing well. Jets have had trouble with running quarterbacks over the last how many years? They had trouble containing Josh Allen the other night. Why would you even think about going to Russ Wilson this week? Why not keep Fields out there? Because he'll give the Jets fits running the ball. And he's done nothing, you know, but besides go 4-2. What would you do, Darren? Would you even?
I agree with you, Kevin. It doesn't make any sense,
especially against this Jets defense. How are the Jets favored? I have no idea.
Why are the Jets favored in Pittsburgh?
Davante Adams.
I mean, listen, was he going to play 20 plays?
Kev, I agree with you. At 4-2, I wouldn't stop making quarterback changes. Yeah. Not coming off a win, also. I mean, you know.
If you're
off a loss where you played badly.
If you're 4-2 in spite of the quarterback play, yeah. But Fields has done nothing to lose the job.
No. Agreed.
A couple of things for this week. Chiefs 49ers, you can see the Chiefs lose their first game this week. They may not, but the 49ers at home are the favorite. And you can see the Vikings lose against Detroit, even though they're home this week. Detroit's got enough talent to play with them. So we might have no undefeated teams after this week. When the Bills made the move for Cooper, they released Valdez-Scantling. I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas City brings him back like they bring back every other old receiver to see if he has any kind of magic with Mahomes. I could see that happening. And then the last thing is the Giants get the Eagles at home. If the Giants were in Philly, I'd really like their chances because Philly right now, Hurts doesn't look good. They had all three stars in there the other day. They had Brown, they had Smith, and they had Barkley along with Hurts. And they still struggled against Cleveland. So, interesting game. And Chargers-Cardinals, also an interesting game on Monday night. I love the Monday doubleheader.
Well, the second game, Chargers-Cardinals, is only on ESPN Plus.
Oh, is it really? I didn't know that.
They need to stream that. Yep.
Yes. I believe so.
That's the stupidest thing. And that's what the league is doing now. They want you to pay more money to watch the NFL.
Ravens-Bucks is a normal Monday night game, but the other one is ESPN Plus.
And just so that there is another London game this Sunday. Jaguars, Patriots, 9:30.
Oh, I can't wait for that one.
Can't wait to get up early to watch that, right?
Yeah. Oh.
All right. That concludes NFL for right now. Darren, let's start it off with some college football. A lot of great games last week.
Yeah, I'm going to do a top 25 recap, and then we'll get into a couple of games this week to go over. Just to go over quickly, Notre Dame, Clemson, Missouri, BYU, Boise State, they all rolled. Boise State, just to mention, Jonte had a 31-for-217 and a touchdown. He also caught a touchdown. He hurt his average yards per carry. It went down because of the 31-for-217. He is on pace to break Sanders' rushing record in a season, which is really, really impressive. Also has 7 touchdowns already for over 50 yards. Most since Herschel had 8 in 1980 for Georgia. So, I mean, you know, we're halfway through the season. He's got 7 50-yard touchdown runs. This guy's a monster. And I always get proud because we pointed out that he was the best running back in the country during the preliminary. So I like that. The only upset in the top 25 was really was Utah. Big upset loss. Rising's now out for the year. Lost at ASU. Lost to ASU. And, you know, Utah is just a shell of itself without Cam Rising, to be honest with you.
Even though he's a seventh year, he's going to go for the medical redshirt again to try to come back for an eighth year.
He wants to be 30 when he finishes. Number 22, Pitt, holds off Cal, 17-15. Cal missed a two-point conversion in the fourth quarter and a field goal in the fourth quarter. Pitt 6-0 for the first time since Dan Marino in 1982. They finished 9-3, though. Number 5, Georgia, 41. Mississippi State, 31. Beck had a huge game for Georgia. Never a blowout, but never really felt like Mississippi State had a chance to win it. Kirby Smart shoved Mississippi State quarterback Van Buren. Kirby Smart's a douche. I'm sorry. Get another player on your sideline and you push him. He's the quarterback. I'm surprised that that Lebby didn't run across the field and knock him out. He's a douche. Texas 34, Oklahoma 3. Red River rivalry, not much of one this year. Sooners led 3-0, and you didn't hear from them again. Ewers was okay in the return. Hard to imagine for me that Venables gets to keep his job at Oklahoma. They're just not doing enough to be competitive in the SEC. Kev, any thoughts on this one?
Oklahoma's not scoring at all. And I was shocked in the rivalry game that they come out and lay that big of an egg. That was atrocious.
You didn't expect it. Did not expect it to be that ugly. Geno did. That's why he's the one that won that game. I mean, you lost it.
Yep.
Number 11, Iowa State, 28. West Virginia, 16. Iowa State, 6-0 for the first time since 1938. You remember that team, Geno.
Absolutely.
Actual coal miners, by the way. West Virginia did something cool. They had coal miners from Appalachia lead the team onto the field after all the damage that was done in that area. I thought it was really cool that they had real coal miners walk them out. I liked it a lot. Number 23, Illinois, 50. Purdue, 49 in a low-scoring thriller. Illinois wins the cannon, which is the prize that these two teams play for when they play. Illinois led 24-3 at the half, and they led by 24 in the third, but they needed a field goal at the gun to tie it, to send it to overtime. Purdue actually scores the touchdown. If Illinois does, they go for two, which I like to do when you're the worst team, but they came up short by a point. Kev, a lot of excitement in this one.
Yep. Great game.
It was a good game. I mean, you didn't expect Purdue to even be close. I think the spread was like 23.5.
Yeah.
Kansas State 31, Colorado 28. Colorado had a good minus 29 rushing yards in this game. K-State led 21-7, but then trailed 28-24 as Shedeur Sanders had a big day through the air. Johnson to Brown for 50-yard scoring strike with 2:14 left, put the Wildcats up for good. Giddens also rushed for 176. Big thing in this game, Hunter got hurt, which is a big blow for Colorado. He was number 2 in the Heisman, in the odds right now behind Jante before that. So that's the thing you got to watch out for Colorado. Colorado is not a very good team. And again, one dimensionally, you're not going to be the team that's pretty good like Kansas State, even at home. Okay. Big one here, Kev. Alabama 27, Carolina 25. I'm not going to say anything. Kev.
Great effort by the Gamecocks coming in as big underdogs. It was 14-0 Alabama late in the second quarter. Sellers abandoned to cut it to 7. Then they get the safety from the middle row into intentional grounding in the end zone, 14-9. Zellis fumbles on the ensuing drive. Kilgore intercepts middle row, though, at the 50, returns it to the 19. He gets out of bounds with 1 second. The Gamecocks get the gift field goal, 14-12 at halftime all of a sudden. Then they take the opening kickoff to start the second half. 16 plays, 85 yards, 8:40, take a 19-14 lead. Interesting note, I read this. Third drive of 16 or more plays for touchdowns given up by Alabama this year. It happened once in the last 10 years back in 2020 against Ole Miss.
Wow.
This Alabama defense is not nearly as good as it's been the last few years. Alabama got a touchdown early in the fourth quarter. And then Alabama's wide receiver almost made a stupid play, almost cost Alabama at the end. Under the 2-minute warning there, Milroe hits Bernard, runs into the end zone for a 34-yard touchdown to give Alabama's a 27-19 lead. If he goes down in the field of play at the 5, say, Alabama takes 3 knees, runs out the clock. Instead, Carolina gets the ball back, drives down for the touchdown with 43 seconds left, misses a 2-point conversion. Sellers overthrows a 2-pointer. Down 2, they recover the onside kickoff at the 49, but unfortunately, a deep ball Hail Mary type throw at the end got intercepted. They lose by 2.
you know, South Carolina's been in a lot of really good games against a lot of really good teams. After they started the season off looking so sluggish, you know, they've been really, really good. Another SEC while we're there, eighth-ranked Tennessee 23, Florida 17 in overtime. Overtime was a big theme this weekend. Only the second overtime game ever for Tennessee, by the way. Thought that was weird. 1998 was the other one. Florida led 10-0. Tennessee went up 17-10. Florida tied it up, and Tennessee won in overtime after Florida missed a field goal. But Tennessee did not settle for the field goal. They just kept running down their throat until they got the touchdown rushing. Florida owns this series, by the way. So the fact that the game is close should not surprise anyone, because Florida's won like 19 of the last 21 in this matchup. Kev?
I was going to say, Mertz tore his ACL during the game, so he's out for the year. Lagway came in, was struggling a lot, did hit the tying touchdown with 29 seconds left. You're down 17-16. You're the underdog. You've got a freshman in the quarterback. Don't you go for two there to try to get the win there?
I would have, because I'm a coach that's going to get fired anyway. So why am I even caring? I'm getting fired.
I thought that was your best chance to win there.
You got to play for the win because you're getting fired. You need something to jar it. You're not surviving the season.
Yep.
Number four, Penn State 33, USC 30 in overtime, Gino. Penn State trailed 20-6 at the half. Caught up with Allen through the air, actually. You went into this game saying Penn State has the two great running backs. USC can't stop the run. And yet USC stopped the run in this game, and Allen went off, threw for 391 and two scores. USC got picked late and then missed a field goal in overtime, and that really cost them. So interesting point in this game before I let you guys have a comment was, so at USC, you could walk out with the team, right? You can pay money to walk at the team out of the tunnel with the team. A Penn State fan paid the money and walked out in full Penn State apparel. So he walked out with the USC team out of the thing. It was like $1,800. They don't even talk like you're paying $20,000. He paid $1,800 and he walked out there fully dressed Penn State. You can't make it up. Talk about a backfire. But again, USC's, I'm sorry, Penn State's number four in the country. USC 3-3. Like I say, Kev, that we're going to talk about this in a little bit. Notre Dame hinges on USC. And Louisville. And when these teams lose, it hurt. But there's a couple teams coming up on their schedule that seem to be rising. We'll get to those in a minute.
Yep.
Number 13, LSU 29, Ole Miss 26. LSU never led until the final play of the game. Nussmeier threw a 23-yard touchdown to tie it with 27 seconds left and then won it in overtime on a 25-yard touchdown. Back-to-back plays, basically. Ole Miss was sloppy. Lots of drops. They lost Parrish in the game. They lost Harris in the game, second half, which hurt. Up, but the big play was up four and driving. Dart gets picked as they're driving to go up, you know, in the fourth quarter. They look like they might go up by 11 there and put the game away. They left LSU in it, and LSU, you know, gets the win. The LSU has a tough second-half schedule. Ole Miss has a tough second-half schedule, but Ole Miss can't afford to lose another one, or they will not be in the playoff. That's a huge loss for Ole Miss this week. And a big win for LSU, who also needs USC to stop losing, by the way.
They need South Carolina. Yeah, both USCs to stop losing, right?
Exactly. They do. Well,
Ole Miss, a lot less players going down this week. They still have a few, but a lot less. I mean, with all the criticism of them, just take the defensive players taking dives.
Yeah, which they do.
Which they obviously do. I mean,
Lane teaches sportsmanship.
Watching that game, you know, my wife said, which team do we root for here? And I go, LSU, because I hate Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin's a douche.
that seems to be a common theme among these SEC coaches, I tell you.
Oh, a lot of these guys are unlikable, let's be honest. Guys like Venables, who are likable, they just don't win. And the game of the week, boys, Outson Stadium, Oregon 32, Ohio State 31. Game ends as the clock expires on a scramble by Will Howard. Just didn't get down fast enough. They had a timeout left. They had everything, but they didn't get down fast enough. Game had three lead changes in the fourth quarter. It was actually an excellent game, living up to the hype. Both Howard and Gabriel played well. Howard was 28 for 35, 326 and two scores. Gabriel, 23 for 34, 341 and two scores. But, you know, a big play in the final drive. Ohio State looked like they were in field goal range, down a 26-yard completion to Egbuka, but an offensive PI on Smith pushed them back. Then you had the next play, Howard's made the scramble. And he just didn't get down fast enough to give them a chance at a field goal. I had that timeout sitting in your pocket, Kev. One last point. I'm going to go right to you. Ryan Day, 1-7 versus top five opponents now at Ohio State. Lanning wins the battle of coaches that are supposedly can't win big games because one of them had to win this one. Record crowded out at Stadium 61-128. I thought it was a really crisp, really well-played football game. I thought that it was a lot of fun to watch. Kev?
A lot of fun. You know, on Saturday night, you flip it between Tennessee, Florida, LSU, Ole Miss, and this game. I mean, three terrific games coming down the end there.
Really was great.
That last drive, like you said, Oregon gets down there, gets the first down at the 28-yard line with 28 seconds left. You've got to find a way to at least get the field goal off to win the game. Inexcusable. No doubt. And especially in college where the offensive pass interference is 15 yards, brought back to the 43. They went incomplete. It was 3rd and 25 with 10 seconds left. Oregon off the defensive timeout lines up. Right before the ball snapped, they put a 12th man out there.
5-yard penalty, yeah.
So Oregon, Ohio State runs the play. Incomplete pass takes 4 seconds off. Oregon traded 4 seconds off the clock for 5 yards. And then Howard scrambles, gets down just as the clock is going from 1 to 0. Ohio State fans shut up. That was not, he was not down with 1 second left. He was down.
It wasn't. It was 0.
Going from 1 to 0. They actually changed the rule now for that. It was announced today by the NCAA. If it's that type of penalty against the defense, the offense has the option of taking the 5 yards and the result of the play, or they can reset the play clock or the game clock to where it was when the ball was blown dead so that you can't take the time off on a cheap play like that.
No, now, that's, I want to say,
boy, it was a smart play because that's what's his name? Oregon's coach.
Lanning,
thank you. Lanning knew the rules and used it to his advantage.
Here's the interesting thing about Ohio State, because even with that 5-yard penalty, it would have been at the 38, okay?
Yep.
Ohio State hasn't kicked a 50-yard plus field goal in 5 years. The one thing you can say about Ohio State is they have not – well, they don't need a lot of field goals.
They don't need it, yeah.
But at the same time, they have not recruited big-time kickers with that huge leg. And that was a situation where, you know, you might have went for a 55-yarder. You know, you might have just thrown the ball away and said, we're going to take our shot with a 55-yarder, and they did not. They did not have a kicker with the leg that they felt confident in. But that was – I thought it was a really great game. I enjoyed all three of the games because LSU Ole Miss was a great game too. Tennessee Florida was a little harder to watch than the other two, but they were all really, really good games. Quick week 8 preview for you. For the first time since October 3rd, 1960, both Army and Navy are ranked. Army's 23rd, Navy's 25th. Just something I wanted to point out, Kev.
No, you mentioned it last week on the podcast. They played UAB this weekend, and you said with UAB's run defense, Army 56 carries for 413 yards as a team. Daly, I mean, talk about a great year that he's having. 102 yards passing and a touchdown and 12 carries for 136 and 4 touchdowns.
Wow.
44-10, they wiped the floor with him. And Navy's been just as good. Navy has the better win right now out of all of them over Memphis. Both teams get Notre Dame. Notre Dame now needs both of these games because these are ranked opponents. I'm joking. Navy may not lose another game until they play Army besides the Notre Dame game, and Army may not lose another game except Navy until they play that. So very interesting. They could both lose this week. You never know, but very strange.
And you're setting up the possibility. Both teams undefeated so far. They could technically still have a chance to meet in the American Conference Championship game. And then the week after, play the traditional Army-Navy game. You could have 2 straight weeks of Army-Navy.
No.
Which, A, would be awesome. And, B, both of these teams also still alive to get that number 5 seed or the fifth automatic spot.
Yep.
Again, not likely, but it doesn't mean it can't happen. Games of the week, just a few to touch on. I'm going to mention this one, even though one of the teams is unranked. Nebraska's 5-1 at 16th-ranked Indiana, who's 6-0. I mean, every game for Indiana is challenging. Nebraska's record is good. This will be one of those things where, you know, we'll see how good Indiana is. 24th-ranked Michigan, 4-2 at number 23, Illinois, 5-1. One of these teams drops out of the top 25 with the loss, and we probably don't talk about them for a while here. To me, Michigan has been very much of a disappointment this year. Another one with a non-ranked team. Number 8, LSU, 5-1, goes to Arkansas, 4-2. Arkansas and LSU, this is a rivalry. This used to be the game they played on the Friday after Thanksgiving when both teams are good. Remember that McFadden game where he basically carried against LSU? He carried Arkansas through?
The introduction of the Wildcat rivalry. Offense, basically, that game.
Oh, absolutely. That's where it started right there. This is a huge rivalry game. LSU coming off their other huge rival when they beat Ole Miss last week. So a lot of emotion going on for them. This could be a place they trip up. So you got to hope Kelly can keep the team going. And then we have the two biggies, Gino. First one, we're going to go to Neyland Stadium on the banks of the Tennessee River. Saturday afternoon, 3:30, ABC. Number 7 ranked, Alabama, 5-1. They'll take on 11th ranked, Tennessee, also 5-1. It's the annual third Saturday in October matchup. Huge game. Loser falls on the brink of not making the playoff when they lose this game. Alabama's a 3-point road favorite as of the last time I checked, right before we started the podcast. Who do you like, G? You've been riding Tennessee all year. Are you sticking with them, or are you going off the ship? Or are you going off the ship here?
No, I'm riding with them. They're getting points at home. This is going to be a hard game. I don't know if they're going to come out, but I think they keep it close. I like Tennessee plus the 3 points.
All right, Kev?
Tough game to pick here. Alabama, after their win against Georgia, they went out, lost at Vanderbilt. Did not look good this weekend in South Carolina. But Tennessee, the last 3 weeks, they've gotten 25, 14, and 23 points. You expect more from this offense. So Tennessee's offense has been sort of stuck in neutral here. I'm going for the upset. I'm going for the road team here. I'm going for Alabama laying the 3, even at Tennessee. But again, I would not be surprised if Tennessee wins this game, obviously.
Like you said, Kev, this is a really, really even game here on paper. Nico has not been good the last couple of weeks. I think they have to take the training wheels off and let him be who he is. He's been great in like the 2-minute drills and stuff like that. So let him play. Let him play fast and loose. Run the ball. Let Nico throw it around. Alabama, like you mentioned earlier, is not Alabama's defense. Tennessee actually has a superior defense in this matchup. But Alabama has Milroe, and Milroe could do a lot of things that a lot of people can't do. It's going to be a real exciting game, but because it's at Tennessee, I'm going to take the Vols to win this one by 3. I think it's a really close game, but I like the Vols.
Yep.
Then we have the nightcap, okay? Under the lights, Saturday night at DKR Memorial Stadium. That's right, Darrell K. Royal Memorial Stadium, Austin, Texas, on ABC. 5-1 Georgia, the 5th-ranked team in the country, takes on number 1 Texas, 6-0. You can easily argue these are the 2 best teams in the country if you want to. This is also a potential national championship matchup down the line as well. You could look at it that way, and it could have been that way last year as well. Georgia needs this one as they can't afford a second loss at this juncture. Texas needs to show why they're number 1. Lots of tremendous athletes on the field. Texas favored by 5. It was 3 to start, went to 3.5, up to 5. Texas is favored right now. Gino, who do you like in this one?
Listen, two really big teams, but anytime I can have Georgia with points, I usually take them. I think there's another change at the number 1 spot again. Give me Georgia plus the 5.
All right. Kev?
I liked it a lot better at 3.5. That I thought it was. I'm still going to lay the 5 and take Texas. I think being home, even though contradicting myself in the last pick, I like Texas at home to cover. I think they're going to do enough. They haven't been slowed down at all in offense. And I think they're going to be able to outscore Georgia and win this game sort of like a 38-28 type game.
This is a real interesting one because Texas has not been slowed down at all, but they also haven't played the competition yet that Georgia has played. Georgia's had that Alabama game. They've had a little bit of a tougher schedule. Athletes are very similar. Ewers did not look great in his return last week, but he didn't have to look great to beat Oklahoma. You know, I'm kind of agreeing with Gino again. Gino, I'm jinxing you again. I'm going to take, because of the 5, at 3.5 I was torn, but at 5 I can see this game being 31-28, 31-27. But I think we're going to have a new number 1 next week, and I think it's going to be Georgia. I think Georgia's going to leapfrog everybody with the road win at Texas and become the new number 1. So I'm going to take Georgia to win this one. I think Georgia wins the game 31-27 in a really good battle. And that is what I have for college football. We have other picks now to make, boys.
All right, so going into this week, I'm at 13-9, Kevin 11-11, Darren at 10-12. Lead has shrunk considerably the last 2 or 3 weeks. My little lead that had built up is gone. I'll start us off. I'm going to take Mississippi State at home against the number 14 ranked Texas A&M squad. The spread is 15. I think Mississippi State keeps it relatively close. I'm not sure they're going to win. I think it's they keep it within 2 touchdowns. Give me Mississippi State plus the 15. And my last game, I'm taking Iowa State at home minus 13.5 against UCF. Iowa State is only giving up a low amount of points per game. They score about 36 at home. Give me Iowa State minus 13.5. Kev?
I don't know why the spread is only 3. Florida State's looked terrible this year. Duke's at home. They're only giving up 3 points at home against Florida State. Vegas is begging you to take Duke for some reason, but I'm going to fall for the trap. I'm going to take Duke minus the 3. And my other game is going so many ways. Do I dare do it? Yeah, what the hell? I'm going to take the Gamecocks plus 2.5 at Oklahoma. Oklahoma's offense just looks so bad. I think South Carolina, Sellers, the training wheels came off a little bit last week. I think South Carolina finds a way to go into Oklahoma and win this game. So I got South Carolina plus the 2.5 on the road.
All right. I am going to start in the Big Ten. I think Illinois at home getting 3.5 from Michigan is – I think Illinois wins this game. I think Illinois is going to win it. I think they're the better team. I like Illinois to get the 3.5 and get out of there. I'm going to go to a team that's burned me twice already, and I'm going to take Missouri laying 4.5 against Auburn. I just don't like Missouri's offense. Kev likes it too, apparently, or likes the other way. I'm not sure.
No,
I think the spread's too low. I don't know why. I just think the spread's too low.
I've got both of those games the same way too. Surprisingly, I didn't take your picks this week.
You didn't. I thought you would. I thought you'd definitely take Illinois. I was stunned you didn't. Yep. I had a couple other ones written down in case I got screwed. But I'm going to take Missouri. I just think that they are a little bit better than Auburn, and I think they can win by a touchdown at home. And that will wrap up our college picks for this week. Gino.
Okay, so we're going to be doing some NHL updates going forward. At this point, not really enough games. Rangers are at 2-0-1. Islanders at 1-1-1. The Devils are at 4-2, but that's really because they played those first two games in Prague the week before the season really started. Most teams in the league have only played 2, 3, or 4 games going into today. It's really too early to look at standings. Any points you guys want? Any NHL points, Darren?
The Calgary Flames are 4-0 for the first time since 2009-2010 season, and only the third time in their history. Now, if you know anything about the Flames, you know that they were predicted to be one of the 5 worst teams in hockey. They still might finish that way, but the fact that they got off 4-0 made me excited. Dallas, Winnipeg, Tampa, and Calgary are the teams that have not lost yet. And Utah got off to a really quick start, too. They won their first 3 before losing a game to the Devils. Colorado and Nashville are the only teams that are pointless so far this year.
All right.
Yeah, I have the Utah note here that they beat the Islanders and the Rangers both in New York in overtime, both games before losing to the Devils. Columbus last night, great tribute for Johnny Gaudreau. Raised his banner up there, his number 13. They started the game with no left winger.
Yep.
And move the puck over there in 13 seconds off the clock, and just if you haven't seen the clips and stop the play, I mean, just wonderful job, just to give a little tribute to Johnny Hockey there.
Absolutely, senseless murder.
Yep.
Good point, Darren. College basketball.
Just real quick, the first rankings are out. They have the top 25, but I'm only going to do the top 10 so everybody knows. The number one team is not UConn, who keeps winning. It's Kansas. 2, Alabama. 3, UConn. 4, Houston. 5, Iowa State. 6, Gonzaga. 7, Duke. 8, Baylor. 9, North Carolina. And the 10th seed is Arizona. 10th ranked team is Arizona. St. John's would technically be 27th, as they're the second team receiving votes just out of it. So college basketball is November 4th, so it's 2.5 weeks away when we have tip-off. I, for one, am stoked, but I love college basketball. Back to you, Val.
All right. Okay. Time to get to the NFL picks.
Kevin has a point, though.
Going into – Kev, I'm sorry. You had another point? I apologize.
I was going to say, equal time here. WNBA, just to mention it, Liberty win to go up 2-1. Maybe another championship, in the first championship possibly for New York in the WNBA, despite being around for 30 years.
Okay.
First championship in New York since 2009 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
11.
It could be the Liberty.
It's going to be the Liberty. I'm sure there'll be tens of people showing up to walk down the parade.
All right. NFL picks. Kev at 12-5-1. Darren at 6-11-1. Gino at 6-12. Just a point, guys. I am 8 for my last 10 picks overall, not including what we're doing here. Kev, start us off. I'll give you first.
I hated this week's lineup here. I had trouble coming up with games here. First one, Atlanta at home, only laying 2.5 against Seattle, who's lost 3 in a row. I'm going to take Atlanta minus 2.5.
I'll cross that one off.
My second game, I'm sorry, Gino. Carolina stinks. I'm going to take Washington at home, even though it's 8 points. I'm going to take the Commanders minus 8 against Carolina. I know they're a little bit better with Dalton, but they get blown out too easily. And my third game, I like the Chiefs. I like Minnesota, but I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to go with Minnesota minus 2.5 at home versus Detroit. Let's see what Detroit can do on defense without Hutchinson creating havoc.
Okay. Darren?
Oh, I'm up. Okay. I'm going to start with Indianapolis laying 3 against Miami. I don't think Miami has much of an offense. Not that Indy does, but I'm going to take Indy to win that game at home. They're a better team at home than they are on the road. I'm going to take Detroit, go head-to-head with Kevin. I'm going to see if Detroit can knock Minnesota off getting the 2.5 points at Mini. I just think that they might have a little bit too much firepower for Minnesota. We'll see how that goes. Again, this is a tough week, too. I'm going to take the Rams laying 6.5 against Vegas. I think that Vegas is kind of free-falling a little bit. I think that the Rams might be able to win this one by a touchdown. They have one win. I don't know why I have such confidence in the Rams this week, but I kind of do. G?
All right. I'm going to start it out with the Bills minus 8 against the Titans at home. My second pick is going to be the Eagles going into New Jersey minus 2.5. And my third pick, and Darren, you killed me with this because I really wanted to go head-to-head with Kev with Detroit because I think Detroit's really going to win this game.
But sorry,
my third game is I'm taking Houston. I'm taking the Texans plus the 3.5 against Green Bay. Got this feeling they're going to play really well. They're already 5-1. They're moving. They're in the right direction. So I got the Buffalo Bills, Philadelphia Eagles, Houston Texans. And that concludes the Week 7 NFL picks.
Cool. Any other points before we wrap up, boys?
Yeah, one.
Yes.
We are currently in the 7th inning. Mets are down 4-0, have 2 men on currently. We'll see if the Mets are able to put a comeback together. Kiki Hernandez hit his 15th career postseason home run in the 6th. Put the Dodgers up 4-0. Darren?
Sounds good. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, the wacky world of sports. A wacky world where the Jets and 22 penalties was the most exciting game of an NFL weekend. Thank you, referees. Please follow the program any way you can. Please download our podcast, wherever you get podcasts, whether it be Spotify, whether it be Audio Boom, whether it be an Apple product, whatever you like. You know, we post on social media, like, share, get everybody involved. We're trying to grow that platform. Subscribe to our show, watch it, listen, be part of it. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.